Good afternoon and welcome to On The Radar, right here on the Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju. Now, it's Wednesday and we are standing right at the heart of the week. For many, it's the turning point, the moment when the weekend still feels far, but the weight of the week is already setting in. The headlines are coming in fast, the political noise is growing louder, and everyday concerns from fuel prices to food baskets continue to shape how we move through the day. But here on The Radar, we hit pause just for a moment to ask the bigger questions, not just what is happening, but why it's happening, who it's affecting, and what it means for ordinary Namibians. Now, whether you're clocking into your shift in Walvis Bay, selling fresh produce in Rundu, or watching Parliament updates from the comfort of your living room in Kleinwenduk, the space is for you. Now, this show is built on curiosity and accountability. We'll unpack everything from infrastructure development, budget allocations and policy shifts to the issues often overlooked, like youth unemployment, access to electricity in informal settlements, and the rise of grassroots movements. No spin, no fluff, just real talk, backed by facts, lived experiences, and the voices of people who matter. You can stream us live on Eagle FM website, stay in the loop via Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn, or join the conversation on our WhatsApp channel for behind the scenes takes and quick updates. And if you're always on the go, make sure to download the Eagle FM app so you are never more than one step away from the stories that shape your world. This is On The Radar, where depth meets clarity and the headlines become reality. Let's get into it. A dispute has emerged at the Ndonga Linena Green Scheme between farm management and small-scale farmers over the true extent of this year's harvest. On Tuesday, the scheme's farmer manager, Jano Rental, expressed optimism about the season's yield, saying that despite persistent challenges, particularly high electricity costs and crops still in the field, the farm anticipates harvesting 95% of its cereal this year. Now, this is a significant improvement compared to previous years, where the yield was reportedly around 40%, said Rental. Now, he acknowledged that the financial pressures posed by the farmers' electricity bills, which amount to roughly $1 million per month, but maintained that the farm's overall production outlook remains strong. However, small-scale farmers working within the scheme have pushed back against these claims, insisting that the harvest has only occurred on the commercial section of the farm. Many of them say their fields remain bare, and this year's outcome has been among the worst they have experienced. There's no cereal or maize grain in our fields. We didn't harvest anything. We are not sure whether the 95% harvest is coming forth, said Warrant Kamui, one of the small-scale farmers. The Ndonga Linena Green Scheme, located in the Kabango East region, is home to around 25 small-scale farmers, some of whom have been cultivating land there for over 15 years. Now, the conflicting reports have raised concerns about transparency and equitable resource allocation within the scheme, prompting calls for an independent assessment of this season's production. Now, let's take a listen to farm manager Jonah Rental.
Rental, I'm a farm manager at Ndonga Linena Green Scheme for the Ministry of Agriculture. We are farming on Ndonga Linena Green Scheme. We do mostly grain cereals, basically maize and wheat. This season we pushed up production to plus minus 95% of the farm. In previous years we were at 40%. Currently we have some maize still in the field. We are still harvesting. We were fixing our phase two of the farm, the pivots, and it was a bit late, but we did plant that pivots, and we are expecting a very good yield this year on our maize. Our target, we are plus minus 200 tons over our target already that we wanted to harvest. So yeah, it's going good, and the pivots we already harvested, we already planted our wheat, our winter crops, wheat, 110 hectares, and then we are still busy harvesting the late maize. Rental, I'm a farm manager at Ndonga Linena.
And now let's listen to a farm scale owner, Warren Kamui.
We are told it's for the commuters, not for class of farmers. But we are included. Actually, the green scheme is meant to multiply more farmers. It's meant for most of the farmers. The farm manager or the service provider are just there to provide service to the most of the farmers. But that is not what is saying. So I will call it sabotage to the most of the farmers. Because if you, as a media personnel, and you don't have a school, and you are not allowed, you are not allowed to operate without your license or whatever. You will not make a living. A taxi driver cannot make a living without having a car and doing it. So it's the same like a small scale farmer. So almost most of the small scale farmers here, we are all farmers. We have grown up before. We've been here for more than 50 years. But for you to be treated that like a small child, whereby you don't plan, because of summer, how are you going to feed you to support your family and kids? And you are expected to feed the nation. If you cannot feed even your own household, how will you end up feeding the nation? So, like the president likes to say, the president, I heard when the president was giving the, when she was addressing to the civil servants, she said she wants to treat corruption like this, terrorism. Which is the same, corruption is terrorism, because you are denying services to the nation. It's the same, if you are denying services to the small farmer, the country is not going to exist. You want people to feed the nation, which is what is going on here. So we are having a lot of issues here in Ndonga Linena. Things, they are not okay. Maybe other projects, they are 50% okay. I can tell you here in Ndonga Linena, it's only 10%, because everything that comes is for the commercial, even when it reaches small scale farmer. That is what happened with our wheat seed. The wheat seed was used, is the one that you saw there. It was small scale farmers. It was used by the commercial, by the farm manager, to plant on the commercial site. But it was written, the delivery note is written small scale farmer. And the farm manager said, no, he did not see that. That was meant for him. He only realized it late. So that is a sabotage. For me, people who are in charge of the green scheme, they are sabotaging the green scheme and they are sabotaging the small scale farmer. I think I can give a chance to the next person. We are told it's for the commuter, not for small scale farmers.
Let's pause right here, and when we do return, we shall be talking to our reporter Anakleta Haikera on what's happening in regards to green screens on ground.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushenife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onore tatu imwe bali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko derewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On The Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, earlier this year, Shandi Kongoro Green Scheme emerged as a key processing hub among Kavango government farms, of which 7 green schemes are situated in Namibia's Kavango region, 4 being government-owned, while the remaining 3 have translated into public-private partnership under lease agreements with private investors. Now, of course, Anakleta is now online, and she's going to go educate us and also inform us on what's actually happening on ground, the reality that is happening in terms of these green schemes. Good afternoon, Anakleta. It's a pleasure to have you.
Good afternoon.
Anakleta, now that there has been a dispute in regards to this green scheme, Ndonga Linena green scheme, it brings up questions of what's really on ground. Is that which we are getting reports really transparency, or is it other contributions, or the what's being brought out really transparent and realistic? Kindly go through.
All right. As everybody knows, Kavango region has become a food basket for the agricultural schemes, basically because the region only have 7 green schemes, and from the 7 green schemes, 4 are government-owned green schemes, in which mainly people regard Shandi Kongoro as the biggest green scheme. Now, earlier this year, I personally visited all the green schemes just to evaluate and see how it is with the food production, and also to see the food security, and also regarding the fact that Kavango region is also one of the greatest regions with the high employment rate. This will definitely make you to see how is the food security in this specific region. So in the Kavango West, we have Musese, which is now a private owned sector, which is really doing quite well with the maize production. And also now most of the green scheme have transitioned to wheat farming as we speak right now. And then from there, the government owned green scheme, which is Sikondo. Mainly there was also some dispute between the residents of the area who gave the land for the land to have a green scheme in it, because they feel, okay, well, Sikondo is doing good when it comes to vegetable production, which is now the potatoes that mainly is being transported throughout in Namibia. That is basically coming from the Sikondo green scheme, which is government owned. But then there is half of the land of the green scheme which is not being planted, and residents feel the need to say they need the land back. But we can't just really say we have to give it back, because now the farm manager explained the reason why half of the land was not planted with any veggie or with any crop. So he initiated to say the reason why half of the land was not planted is because they are looking into animal feed for this specific land or hectares that were not planted. Now, moving to Kavango East region, where we have Ubungubungu, which is well known for its wheat production. Small scale farmers have a problem with the green scheme itself. This is basically because of the green scheme not having a combined harvester. And for them not having a combined harvester, it has really affected their maize production, especially this year, because the combined harvester was initially borrowed from Hot Container, but it only came late, where even when it arrived, some of their crops were already dying on the floor, because now, you know, with the windy, Kavango itself has, it's very windy, and this year there's a bit of frost as well. So it has really affected their crops, and the harvest wasn't good. Up to now, they are still also complaining about the harvest that they have gotten from this year. And the farm manager, Florence Smith, also narrated to us that even though the green scheme is doing well with the wheat production, it's also affected by the fact that the green scheme does not have a combined harvester on its own. Because if they will have had a combined harvester, it will be easier for them to finish up with the crops harvesting of the maize meal that were already in a stage of being harvested.
Yeah.
So due to the fact that they do not have a combined harvester, both the farm manager and the small scale farmers were affected. So then looking at the harvest, really to say, I don't really see to it that it will be really good with the small scale farmer, but at least with the commercial farm, which is now the big farm, Vungu Vungu farm, there will be production here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But mind you also that they do not have their own milling plant where they have to now put the maize meal at the final stage. So they need to go and borrow it from Shadi Kongoro again. And now just moving away from the Vungu Vungu, then we have now what we call Mashare Green Scheme, which is a private own green scheme, which is a public-private partnership green scheme. And Mashare is well known for its blueberries. So when we talk in terms of green scheme production, the grains have been there, but now literally the ones that have been harvested is just maize. All the green scheme that I have visited so far has now run related to wheat, but with the Mashare green scheme it's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
They just harvested their maize recently, and the soil is still available for the next crop, perhaps that they are going to harvest as we speak at the moment.
Yeah.
And moving from Mashare, let me take you to Ndongalinena. Ndongalinena is one of the biggest also green scheme that is known for its amazing production.
Mm-hmm.
So now, while speaking to the farm manager, he said the green scheme is doing so well, to say at 95% compared to all the previous year when the farm was at 40%.
Yeah.
But coming back to the real deal, which is now the small scale farmer, they think things were not literally fair for them, because they feel they have a dispute between them and the farm manager.
Mm.
So now this year only, they didn't plant anything, because literally most of the crops that came to the farm manager, and they said the farm manager maybe didn't realize that the wheat that came was supposed to be handed over to the small scale farmer. But instead, he used it for the commercial farmer.
Oh,
and
okay.
By that, they feel he eventually subsidized to take the wheat from them, because already they did not do so well with the maize production.
Yeah.
But as we were speaking to him, he elaborated that he felt the need to explain himself to say perhaps maybe the delivery man who came to deliver the wheat did not explain it to him to say the wheat belonged to the small scale farmer, but then when it was delivered, because he also ordered 174 grams, same as the one that the small scale farmer ordered. So he just used the wheat seed without knowing that it eventually belonged to the small scale farmers. Okay, now let's move to the next green scheme, which is now
Anacleta, before you actually move on. Now what I'm picking up there is that perhaps since last year for them, for Mr. Rental, the harvest was, the yield was about 40%, and now it's standing at, projected to be 95%. Of course, that mistake perhaps and that misunderstanding might have actually worked in favor, as the yield is now gonna be way more than it would have been last year. Or are we perhaps excluding the fact that maybe the small-scale farmers could have also produced much, or how now?
Yeah. What is basically happening here is also the small-scale farmers are sitting to say that if they produce more, and the commercial farmer also produces more, it can totally bring the yield to 95%.
Okay.
Looking at how the green scheme is, because if when I was there standing in the middle of the green scheme itself, you see that the commercial farm is doing so well, like it's green everywhere. But then when you turn around, you see that the small scale farmer is brownish. There's just nothing happening. So for them, they feel like, no, he's just giving this percentage toward his commercial farming, but he's not looking at the fact that small-scale farmers are also there to produce for the nation as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now we can move on to another green scheme.
All right. Now, moving on to another green scheme, this is one of the green schemes that has been there for long, but it was not planted at all. Now here we are talking about Shitemo Green Scheme. The Shitemo Green Scheme had problems throughout previous year because of the electricity theft and cable theft and also
Yeah.
So for the past 4 years, the green scheme has been non-operational due to these critical challenges that I've just mentioned. Now, moving to the new thing is that the green scheme eventually now has a new manager who's just started this Monday, and already yesterday he was in the field busy fixing the cables, electricity, and also the irrigation scheme, in which he say he prefer planting peanut butters, so that at least Namibia can have their own production of peanuts, so that we can relate to us buying our own peanut butter than buying it from foreign countries. So initially, this is a PP green scheme, but when you look at how he was expressing himself and also the love of the people that he has, he was already talking about creating employment for the resident of Shitemo, because he feels local must benefit first before other people should benefit. Because now this is just a new transition from previously where it was abandoned, and two, now that it's coming back into action, people around the area should benefit before anybody else. So now basically, it is now Shitemo Green Scheme. Now from Shitemo Green Scheme, you get the last green scheme which is now the whole hub among all the green scheme in the Kavango East region, which is Shadikongoro. Shadikongoro is actually doing so well because Shadikongoro has sunflower production where they produce oil. So
yeah.
When we are talking right now, we should also know part of the cooking oil that we're using comes from Shadikongoro. And
hold on for me. Just a quick commercial break and then we'll back to just resume.
Okay.
Thank you, Anacleta.
You save at slash prices on groceries such as 4 kilos real good frozen mixed chicken portions, just 189.99 Namibian dollars. 84 grams of Robertson's chicken spice, just 13.99 Namibian dollars. Kno soup of all variants, just 5.99 each. 700 milliliter Wellington's tomato sauce, just 25.99 Namibian dollars. 2 liters of Right Brand sunflower oil, just 68.99 Namibian dollars. And 2 kilo bag Pasta King elbow pasta, just 44.99 Namibian dollars. Save big at USAVE.
Okay. Anacleta, you're busy telling us about Shadikongoro green scheme.
So the what I was just saying is that Shadikongoro green scheme has now emerged as the key processing hub among all the government farms in the Kavango East region, because the green scheme that we are talking about here is one of the green schemes that provides milling services and oil processing for the other three government green schemes, which is Ndonga Linena and Sikondo in the Kavango West and Uvunguvungu. So it is actually the hub, the biggest green scheme, because it has its own milling plant where all these other three green schemes that I was talking about go to and do the milling processing.
And don't you think perhaps the ministry has to do something about that? Of course, we appreciate everything that the ministry is doing in terms of infrastructure, since Shadikongoro is strategically advantaged and positioned as a regional agro-processing hub. Perhaps maybe something that we can also then take to other green schemes, so that production is then faster and processing is also then faster.
No, I feel most of the green schemes that were hampered by, for instance, the combined harvester. So if you look at the production, it was reduced due to the fact that there wasn't a combined harvester machine. But then if they can at least just have it on each and every farm,
yeah,
so they can do their own production, it's going to help with the productivity. Then we don't need to buy things from foreign countries anymore, especially the maize meal, because if all these green schemes are up to standard of producing maize meals, why would we want to buy GMO seeds from abroad? So we can eventually just have it in the region itself.
Mm-hmm. And since obviously NDP 6 and other documents are trying to have set out goals that want to enhance economic growth and value addition is just one of them. Yeah, that would be something good to start on. But, you know, overall, as you know, with news, especially for you, Anacleta, how you cover our green schemes and cover what's happening in Kavango East, Kavango West, you can see that there's quite progress compared to, of course, maybe then you weren't really hearing what's happening, but you can see there's quite much progress Namibia is making in terms of green schemes or in terms of agriculture. It looks like we're really actually moving somewhere, hey?
We are definitely moving somewhere. This is if the government will put more money into the agricultural sector. And believe me, there's something I've learned, that agriculture is not only about food production, but agriculture is also about learning. You understand? Mm. Most of those that are going to learn about agriculture in high institute when they come back, they also need to come and learn in the field itself, not only by being in books, so to say, but then you need to stand in the field and also work, experience the sun, know how to drive a tractor, know how things have been plugged off, yeah. So agriculture basically is not just about food production, but it's also about learning.
Yeah, I hear you. Anacleta, thank you so much for always making time for us and educating us about what's making headlines in terms of especially those two regions. And of course, I know you do cover other stories from other regions, but we do appreciate that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. And then we had it from Anacleta Haikera, that is Eagle FM reporter, and she always updates us in regards to what's happening, most especially in Kavango East and West region. But of course, if you do want to follow up on more on what's making headlines in terms of green schemes, do follow us on Eagle FM Namibia Facebook, as we always update in such regards. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do come back, we'll yet have another issue that we're going to analyze. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi kayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa. Nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back. And now we are joined by Dr. Omoka Koyomata, who is an economist, to talk about the latest in regards to U.S. tariffs. Good afternoon, Dr. Omu, and welcome to On the Radar Analysis.
Yes, good morning, Happy, and afternoon, and good afternoon to our listeners.
Now, the U.S. has imposed new tariffs on several countries, including Namibia, South Africa, as part of its 2025 trade policy, with Namibia facing a 21% import tariff on goods such as diamonds, fish, beef exports to the U.S., and South Africa facing a hefty 30% tariff on its goods. And later on, earlier on this year, we saw President Cyril Ramaphosa actually go to the White House, and from what it seems, there probably might not be actually any going back in terms of their 30% imposed tariff by the U.S. and the 90-day rule is almost to a close. What do you say?
Yes, yes. We are really in uncharted waters. This is what I'll call economic madness by the Trump administration. Very incoherent policies, as well as bullish tactics, using that to basically force countries to come to their terms. Now, the impact that it will have for African countries, including our own, that is SACU countries, the five of them, is huge. If that happens, you have seen that the impact on
Dr. Amu? Are you still with me? Dr. Amu? Ish, I might need to call him back, so just stay tuned. Right? Oh, okay. I lost you completely there. If you could just kindly repeat what you'd said, I'd lost you.
Yes. I don't know where we lost each other, but what I was saying is that the impact on Lesotho, South Africa, will be huge, and that will impact Namibia also. If you look at the automotive industry in that is South Africa, agricultural products, South Africa to the U.S., as well as the Lesotho industry could shut down just because of those tariffs, because the whole idea of tariffs is to make goods coming into the U.S. not competitive, so that it will be higher compared to American goods, and then shut your goods out. Now, when it comes to if countries like that, you mentioned Ramaphosa going to the White House, and Lesotho also went, when with the first announcement, they flew to Washington also. If there is renegotiation of the tariffs, because what Trump, if you don't levy tariffs for U.S. goods coming into your countries, then fine, we are going also not to charge you for bringing your goods. Then what will happen is that the tariffs that we receive on imported goods are going to be lower. The receipts that goes into the SACU pool are going to be lower, and the distribution of the from the SACU pool, let's say to Namibia, is going to diminish or decrease. So that will affect our budget. That is the national budget, because we are going to receive less money from SACU. And that could affect our public spending, and that poverty reduction, employment creation, etc., are going to be compromised. And we are going to face a serious hurdle in our development efforts.
Yeah.
Now, Namibia doesn't seem to be worried from how things are going. Recently, of course, in having launched its first Africa Continental Free Trade Area export consignment on June 30th of this year, 2025. How does this move actually, what does this move actually say about Namibia? And in regards to, we imposed a 25% tariff, and of course, talks have just weighed down in that. What do you say?
Namibia should be very worried. Worried because of what the Trump administration is trying to do to South Africa, including imposing sanctions on ANC members, etc. They are not only going to try economic punishment on South Africa, but also political punishment. So it's not easy, and it is not going to be easy for our anchor economy, which is South Africa. As for the exports, the first consignment through the African Continental Free Trade Area arrangement was, it is a very, very, very welcome move. But the problem with intra-Africa trade, there are many hurdles, financial hurdles, that is the payment system, and also physical constraints like your roads, if you have airports, etc., if you have to export your goods to other African countries. It's not a joke. So there are serious constraints yet to be ironed out, but that was a welcome move, but it's not something to rely on at the moment. So we should try and explore other markets. For now, our beef, we get quota to the EU, so our beef, we can send it to the EU still. And forget about the American market if they don't want our beef. Expensive that side. The other big giant is China. It's also beef as well as for our the items you mentioned, grapes, you mentioned fish, etc. So for now we are okay. We still have those markets. But we wanted to diversify our markets, because if you are just in few markets, they could later on start to dictate the prices of your goods, and your prices for your goods could go down. But for now, it's okay. But we should be very, very worried. If the South African economy goes down, we'll go down with it.
That's a very powerful statement. Now, on Sunday, we witnessed what we can describe as an ending of a months-long standoff between two of the world's biggest economic partners, that is, negotiations between President Donald Trump and European Commissioner President Ursula von der Leyen in Scotland, of which the pair agreed to a US tariff on all EU goods of 15%. Just what do you make of this, considering that this was halved from the initial 30% import tax that Trump had threatened to implement on them?
Yes, that is good news for global economic growth, because that giant, the EU, if they are affected, it will affect global trade, and as well as global economic growth, which could also impact our mineral exports.
Yeah.
So that is also good news.
Absolutely. Dr. Omu, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader Analysis.
You. Thank you, Happy, and also good afternoon to our listeners. Bye.
Okay. And of course, there you had it from Dr. Omu Kakuyamata, who is an economist and always also giving us heads up on what's making headlines on in regards to outside the borders. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here. But when we do retain, of course, we will be bringing you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators. Stay tuned. You're still in my company up until 2:30.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to
to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere uliko ni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu kondado ili nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka. Okone ushe ndife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko derewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM. The eye.
Welcome back, and it's at this juncture that we take you to what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators. Of course, we always start off with the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. Now, one US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars, 17 Namibian dollars and 88 cents, while 1 euro will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 62 cents. One Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 60 cents, and 1 pound sterling will get you 23 Namibian dollars and 89 cents. Now, one thing that I always do enjoy when I do read economic indicators in terms of comparing the Namibian dollar to other currencies always gives me really, a good courage, or should I put it to say, always really, gives me some sort of sense of pride in terms of our Namibian dollars and our Namibian dollar. And of course, it's pegged to South African rand, which is 1 to 1. And the currency in comparison, as you compare, you can see that our dollar is actually quite strong, hey? Now, 1 Chinese yuan will get you 2 Namibian dollars and 49 cents. I want to be very clear. 2 Namibian dollars and 49 cents. 1 Botswana pula will get you $1.32. That is 1 Namibian dollar and 32 cents. 1 Nigerian naira. They actually say just 1 naira, but 1 Nigerian naira will get you 0.012 Namibian dollars. And now, in regards to other trading economics, WTI crude oil futures hovered above $69 per barrel on Wednesday, holding at a 5-week high and supported by supply concerns. That is after President Donald Trump pressured Russia with a shortened timeline to end the conflict in Ukraine. Now, Trump gave Moscow a 10-day deadline to propose a satisfactory resolution or face consequences, including the imposition of 100% secondary tariffs on countries continuing to trade with Russia. Now, such measures could significantly disrupt the oil market, as major U.S. trading partners, key buyers of Russian crude, may scale back or halt purchases amid rising compliance risks. Now, adding to the upward pressure, the U.S.-EU trade deal, despite introducing a 15% tariff on most EU goods, averted a broader trade war that could have implicated a third or global trade and weakened fuel demand. Now on the downside, prices faced some pressures after API data revealed a surplus of 1.5 million barrel build in US crude inventories, defying expectations of a 2.5 million barrel decline. Brent crude oil futures hovered around $72.5 per barrel on Wednesday, holding a 5-week high. U.S. natural gas futures rose to 3.16 MMBTU, rebounding from a 10-week low of $3.006 in the previous session. Now, as forecast for extreme August heat, limited demand expectations. Meteorologists expect hotter than normal temperatures across much of the U.S., particularly in the southeast, mid-south and midwest, driving increased use of air conditioning and boosting power sector gas consumption. Now, geopolitical tensions also added support after, of course, the U.S. president shortened the timeline for Russia to agree a Ukraine ceasefire. Gold hovered around $3,320 per ounce on Wednesday, staying near a 3-week low as easing trade tensions reduced the metal's safe haven appeal. Now, with additional talks ongoing with Canada, South Korea and others, investors are increasingly optimistic that further escalations can be avoided. Meanwhile, the U.S. and China are continuing discussions to extend a tariff truce set to expire in 2 weeks, with President Trump expected to make the final decision on any extension. Now, investors are also closely watching the FOMC decision due today, while the Fed is widely expected to keep rates unchanged. Markets will focus on Chair Powell's press conference for any signals of a possible rate cut in September. Soybean futures slipped below $10 per bushel on Friday, pressured by trade uncertainty and subdued export demand. Ongoing trade negotiations and the lack of clarity on export outlook continue to weigh on market sentiment. Now, while weather conditions were not the main driver, they still play a secondary role in shaping expectations during the crucial gain or grain field period. Still, the U.S. Department of Agriculture confirmed private scales of 142,500 metric tons of new crop soybeans to Mexico, offering limited support. And that's what we had for you today in terms of trading economics and economic indicators. Let's pause right here and do expect some international news, continental news, and regional news just right after the commercial breaks. See you.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch.
Do you want to stand a chance of winning a 500 Namibian dollar ShopRite USave gift voucher? Then simply tell us, what makes ShopRite USave different from all the other stores? Send your answers on WhatsApp to 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. You save. I save. We all save at USave.
Such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now get ready for news beyond the borders. We're starting off in South Africa. South Africa says it will continue with U.S. trade engagements.
Dr. Hook says the United States of America prepares to roll out its sweeping tariffs. This may affect several countries come August 1st. Former President Kgalema Motlanthe says the country must continue to negotiate and explore other markets as well.
Well, as you heard from the DG of DERCO, they are at work, busy, negotiating and discussing with their counterparts in the United States of America. And of course, from the rest of the seminar, you heard that we shouldn't be single-track minded. We should be also opening up other tracks to try and gain more access to other markets here.
Is still engaging with Washington, D.C. to thaw frosted ties. U.S. President Donald Trump's tariff decision, since he took office, has rattled the markets and sent a wave of uncertainty through the global economy.
Still a work in progress. I suppose we'll wait to see what happens at the end of August. We had a very capable team from DTIC that has done all the work that they needed to do, working with DERCO and others, of course. But it's actually now a wait-and-see game in terms of what the actual outcomes will be.
The Presidential Special Envoy in North America, Mukwege Sijana, says these are very unprecedented times, but the world should not despair.
My role really is a Presidential Special Envoy. My role is really to advise on policy, and I do engagements for sure, but I think my main focus is building South Africa's response to this reality, to the new reality, and engaging with all the agencies of the state, but also engaging with all stakeholders in the private sector, in civil society and everywhere, so that South Africans speak with one voice on these issues, and also educating ourselves about what should our responses be.
And are you going to DC anytime soon?
Well, I mean, it's not on my agenda unless the president deemed it necessary.
Meanwhile, the U.S. clinched a huge trade deal with the European Union that includes a 15% tariff on most EU goods, $600 billion U.S. dollars of investments in the U.S. by European firms, and $750 billion in energy purchases over the next 3 years. Kyle Khumalo, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump has shrunk off G20 meeting in South Africa due to problems, quote-unquote, with SA policies.
The comments from President Trump were said on the fly in response to a question about the G20 from a reporter on board the presidential jet as it traversed the Atlantic Ocean back to the United States. And while his position might yet shift, it would follow similar actions by his senior cabinet officials, Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, to give South Africa a wide berth for official G20 meetings at the ministerial level.
Are you going to attend the G20 summit this year in South Africa?
I don't think so. No, I think maybe I'll send somebody else because I've had a lot of problems with South Africa. They have some very bad policies, very, very bad policies, like policies where people are being killed. A lot of people are being killed. So I think I probably won't.
Any updates?
I'd like to, but I don't think I will.
Well, I can answer that for Chris.
After a tense public meeting in the Oval Office in May, President Ramaphosa later emerged after a closed-door session to speak to the media, and where he struck an optimistic tone on the possibility of President Trump coming to South Africa for the G20.
We also discussed the G20, and we stressed that the G20, having been formed by the United States, of course, together with other countries, it's important that the United States should continue playing a key role in the G20, more particularly because I want to hand over the presidency of the G20 to President Trump in November. And I said, he needs to be there. I don't want to hand over the presidency of the G20 to an empty chair. I want to hand it over to him sitting in that chair in November. And he is going to give serious consideration to it. In fact, I expect him to be coming to South Africa, and he, having realized the important role that the United States continues to play in international or multilateral formations or organizations like the G7 and the G20, and he having said, of course, the G7, would be much more impactful with the participation of the United States, as the G20 would be more impactful in global matters with the participation of the largest economy in the world. So my takeaway from that is that G20 participation by the United States is going to be happening. So we're particularly pleased with that.
SABC News also directly put the question to President Trump during this exchange in the Oval Office in May. If this Afrikaner resettlement issue is resolved, you're going to go into a room after this, you guys are going to talk. If it is resolved, what is the potential for the future-looking relationship between the United States and South Africa?
I mean, it's a little bit bad when you see a stadium with 100,000 people in it, because that means it's more than just a little movement. It's a pretty big movement in South Africa, so it has to be resolved.
But is there potential for the relationship moving forward?
I hope so.
You going to the G20 in November?
I mean, I'm not here for my health.
Ahead of the G20 leaders' summit in November, another pressing issue for South Africa this week, amid efforts to agree a new trade framework agreement with the United States as part of efforts to offset the imposition of a 30% tariff on most goods exported to the United States. That deadline looms large on Friday, August 1st. Shervin Brycebees, SABC News, New York.
Zambia, on the other end, eyes 3 million tourists this year.
We had a conversation, exchange of notes, and we thought we should meet in this way. What do I mean? Permanent secretaries, controlling officers, more importantly, and those that support you in the ministries, that interact with the sector more often. The sector interacts with almost every minister because of the nature of the business. But the line sort of team is yourselves here. And we want to make sure that we have a decent conversation, because we've had meetings before here. We have shared checklist of things that need to be done in order to propel further growth. And I must say that we acknowledge the growth in the sector, phenomenal growth in the sector, tourism sector. It's already contributing to the GDP growth in our economy, including in the drought year when we were stressed. Energy, mining, of course, was stressed, but tourism showed up, to be honest. And we don't want it to backslide. We want it to continue surging forward, as it were. So, but let me return to the issues ahead from the sector themselves. They're in an expansionary mode now. So let us add more fuel to that expansion. And so we can also, number three, have treasury income, which is much needed to support our free education policies, to support our CDF, to support, indeed, in water and sanitation, in health sector, our mini-grids. By the way, Mr. O'Donnell and team today, we also want to include, we can check this, the issue of off-grid electricity.
By you yourself going out into the wider world and showing and demonstrating that Zambia is open to business, and the fact that you are attracting a huge amount of investment into the country. And over time, no doubt that investment is going to yield results and the economy is going to begin to grow. I have no doubt that the projected GDP figures for this year are certainly going to be achieved. And that comes about basically because of mining and agriculture and manufacturing. And we're here today to try and advocate for some policy changes in the tourism sector that can enable tourism to also be one of the more significant contributors to GDP. Having said that, we do have to acknowledge the tremendous progress that has been made. In 2023, our visitor arrivals were 1.3 million. In 2024, they were 2.2, which is a staggering 70% increase year on year. It doesn't happen very often in other parts of the world, so the fact that it's happened in Zambia is a tremendous achievement to you and your government, sir. And then in 2025, we were aiming to get 3 million visitors, and that's the number we would like to achieve.
Burundi urges youth to embrace farming for a sustainable future.
Burundi, agriculture is the largest employer in a country sinking into poverty, with the country's young population as the first victims of unemployment. According to the Employment Assistance Association, this problem can be attributed to the lack of funding and the lack of available arable land for young people seeking employment.
Firstly, young people face difficulties, primarily a lack of startup capital. The lack of startup capital means there is a lack of access to land. So with regard to the lack of startup capital, we as organizations that support young people have opted for ecological agriculture to overcome this challenge.
Another problem is a lack of adequate information and training, and as a result, young people's sector-focused businesses and organizations go bankrupt. Young people who have neither experience nor patience find it difficult to survive in the agricultural sector.
Many young people start cooperatives, organizations or businesses, but after a few months or a year, they close down. Firstly, this is often because they start their activities without sufficient information about the field, or they embark on a business venture based on speculation, believing that success will come quickly.
For this reason, the Traverse Chamber of Young People of Burundi decided to organize this educational and awareness-raising fair for young people, especially in the Ngozi area, as it is one of the country's agricultural bread baskets. During the fair, demonstrations are organized in public for young farmers on certain practices, like the use of bio-waste, such as urine, as organic fertilizers for fields.
It is of great interest to us because the fields are where we use urine as fertilizer to produce good crops. And above all, the harvest is good. We are very happy because if production is good, even if we look for a customer, it is quickly done and we are given a huge sum of money.
But the fair was also a means for the association to take advantage of the situation and call on the government and donors to support the agricultural sector and their projects for sustainable development.
Nigeria's oil sector faces crisis and underperformance.
Now onto the continent's largest oil exporter. The Nigerian Economic Summit Group recently raised concerns over the persistent underperformance of the oil and gas sector there. And the group is warning that that poses a significant threat to the effective implementation of the 2025 budget. In its latest publication, the NESG 2025 Q1 GDP alert, the think tank points out that Nigeria's crude oil production in the first quarter of 2025 was well under the government's budget benchmark of 2.06 million barrels per day. And the group is warning that this shortfall translates directly into lost oil revenues, which are critical to funding public expenditure that was outlined in this year's budget. Let's dig into the details of what exactly is happening in Nigeria. Kelvin Emmanuel is the thematic lead for oil and gas at the Nigerian Economic Summit Group. He's with me in studio tonight. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with this interesting contradiction that we see, or rather this divergent trend, right? So oil sector GDP growth has been in decline since the third quarter of last year, but oil output has gone up over that same period of time. What explains what's going on there?
It hasn't really gone up. The output net of condensate is about 1.55 million barrels per day. With condensate, it's about 1.75, 1.8 million barrels per day. The government projects in the 2025 budget for $75 oil price, 2 million barrels.
Yeah.
But the reality on the ground is, number one, Nigeria cannot account for its hydrocarbons. Mm-hmm. And that's because you don't have fiscalization upstream that shows you accurately how much crude oil, water, and gas, your basic sediment and water plus associated gas content comes out of surface, what gets lacked in it, because most of the lease accountability custody transfer units are wrongly calibrated by the upstream regulator. Mm-hmm. So Nigerian government cannot accurately tell how much crude oil and gas comes to surface on a daily basis.
So are they undercounting it?
It is my belief, because the presidency relies on paper reports from the state oil company to tell it how much crude oil and gas comes out to surface. And given the history of the state oil company, I personally do not believe the figures they are banding. So that's the first step. You don't have an hydrocarbon accounting framework. And this is one of the reasons why most of the international operators, the Six Sisters, Chevron, ExxonMobil,
Shell, talk more about
Total, Eni, have moved offshore because of the issues associated onshore. You have a situation where they put crude from wellheads through the aggregation pipes down to lacked units, down to terminal, and they have 20 to 22% of technical losses on their balance sheets for what gets to terminal.
And at that point, that's now essentially what we talk about when you talk about pipeline vandalism, oil theft, etc., etc. But in addition to that, the undercounting issues that you're talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
Wasn't that 2 million barrels a day targets to begin with, they were completely unrealistic? Because I know it's not the first time that the government has put that number forward. Mm. And every time it shows up, we're like, but hang on a minute, you're effectively projecting that somehow you're going to find an extra 500,000 barrels a day in extra output just over the course of the fiscal year, which, given all of the infrastructure issues, it's old, it's aging, especially on the onshore side, there's barely any investment on that front. It just can't happen. So wasn't that number to begin with a very unrealistic estimate?
So, first of all, operators have an issue with cost savings, which are the issues I talked about. Technical losses is a major problem. They have an issue with the macroeconomic position of the country right now. If you see inflation, if you see exchange rates, and if you see the interest rates in Nigeria, prime lending rates in Nigeria is about 30 to 32%. Commercial lending rates
extremely high.
Are around 35 to 36%. Businesses, if you look at the pre and post IRR, of the hurdle rate for a lot of these final investment decisions for the companies upstream, you see that they are at IRR of anywhere between 12 and 15%, which is very low, you know. If you look at the fact that Guyana, for example, in the Caribbean, has gone from zero to about 600,000 barrels within the last 5 to 6 years, and Nigeria has had a 57-year upstart since the early 70s, and is barely able to scratch 2 million barrels. You see the history of underinvestment in the sector. You see the legacy issues around the petroleum fiscal regime of Nigeria, the technical losses that operators incur, the lack of policy coordination for the petroleum fiscal regime. And you see the companies divesting because they don't want to have to deal with any of the issues onshore with host community development trusts, restiveness, decommissioning, and abandonment cost remediation issues. You know, before the PIA, there was no provision for decommissioning, abandonment and remediation contribution. Post the PIA, there's provision, but a lot of the communities that have suffered from environmental pollution are not willing to welcome the operators back. So the IOCs are just like, okay, we're just going to leave it, go, and go offshore where we don't have these issues, where we have to deal with FPSOs. That's why you see, for example, that SNEPCO and its partners like Total, that has recently divested 12.5% equity, ExxonMobil, they invested in Bonga North, and they are going to achieve first oil in 2027. And at peak, they're expecting to do about 110,000 barrels per day and do up to about 660 million standard cubic feet of natural gas that they intend to feed into NLNG. Okay? They've gone offshore because they don't want to have to deal with these issues.
But who...
France-China AI collaboration investigates Earth's origins.
In a groundbreaking collaboration between China and France, scientists in Paris, led by senior researcher Razvan Karakas, are zooming in at the atomic level to simulate ancient volcanic eruptions and early magma oceans using AI to uncover the secrets of how planets like Earth were formed.
At the end, we do a lot of statistics and a lot of mathematical analysis and some physics and so on. And then we try to extract properties that we can relate to the actual phenomena that happen in reality, like that volcano.
Because it's impossible to simulate the billions of atoms in actual lava, researchers are focusing on a small sample, putting it under a powerful microscope, assuming it reflects the whole. The challenge lies in bridging this atomic-scale data with large-scale volcanic activity, connecting what can't be seen with what we observe in nature.
The work that's being done here in Paris was seen as science fiction just a decade ago, but now with AI and machine learning, scientists are making it reality.
Scaling up our understanding of planetary formation.
Without AI and without machine learning, we cannot do it, because we would always be stuck on this small scale. And this is what we've done for many years. We know how it works very well. Honestly, with that, we are super okay today. So we can do, we can calculate, we can interpret interactions between the atoms. It's just that it's very complicated to relate this scale to the scale of the reality.
And as this collaboration between France and China continues to blossom, so too does the speed of technological advancement.
That's what we are trying to do, 1 million atoms. And by doing this, we can avoid the what we call it finite size scale when we run the molecular dynamics.
And how surprised have you been so far with the findings?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. It's always great to do science, to discover new things, to explore the unknowns.
U.S.-China tariff truce holds for now.
A U.S.-China trade truce looks set to hold, for now at least. The pair wrapped up 2 days of talks in Stockholm on Tuesday. They agreed to seek another 90-day extension of their tariff ceasefire, and both sides described the talks as constructive. U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent spoke afterwards.
So now here you have the two largest economies in negotiation, and as I've said before, and we reiterated to them, we don't want to decouple. We just need to de-risk with certain strategic industries.
However, no breakthroughs were announced, and U.S. officials said Donald Trump would ultimately decide whether to extend the truce, which is currently set to expire on August 12th. Without an agreement, tariffs could snap back to triple-digit levels, effectively choking off trade between the two countries. Speaking on Air Force One, on his way back to Washington from Scotland, Trump sounded positive.
I just had a phone call from Scott Bessent, and had a very good meeting with China, and it seems that, I mean, they're going to brief me tomorrow, we'll either approve it or not.
Potential sticking points remain, however. Bessent says he warned China that it could face major new tariffs if it continued to buy sanctioned Russian oil. But he says Beijing gave no indication that it was about to stop making such purchases. If the truce is extended, that could pave the way for a meeting between the US president and Chinese leader Xi Jinping later in the year. Trump himself thinks that's likely.
Oh, he wants to meet, and I look forward to the meeting too, but I would say before the end of the year.
Bessent and Trump are now expected to meet back in Washington on Wednesday, when the president will have his final say on extending the truce.
Tsunami waves built in California as a threat down in Hawaii and Japan.
Well, a huge earthquake, one of the strongest recorded in modern history, has triggered tsunami warnings across large parts of the Pacific. The 8.8 magnitude quake struck off the coast of Far Eastern Russia. There are warnings of aftershocks and waves of up to 4 meters reported there. It also sparked tsunami warnings of varying levels across much of the world. The highest warning levels were in place in Hawaii and also across most of Japan. They have now been downgraded. There have also been alerts and warnings of differing levels across the Pacific, Alaska, the west coast of America, Mexico, Ecuador, Peru, Indonesia, the Philippines, Guam, the Galapagos, Micronesia, Taiwan, even New Zealand. Many have now been downgraded. Well, let's have a look at how the situation unfolded. The earthquake struck off Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula at 1:27 p.m. local time, nearly 2:30 in the morning here in the UK. People in the region immediately began sharing videos of themselves as their buildings shook. The region's governor called for people to remain calm. The earthquake, one of the most powerful ever recorded, caused some building damage in Kamchatka, but there have been no reports of anyone being killed, and no one was in this kindergarten you can see here at the time of the quake. Within hours, the tsunami began rolling in the nearby Sakhalin region. Houses on the coastline were flooded. Buildings across the coast were swamped by the incoming tide. And across the Pacific, people began receiving alerts on their mobile phones, urging them to get to higher ground, including this one, live on BBC News.
I would say that a lot of the people that... Sorry, we have a siren going off now.
Well, as the tsunami warning spread, people in Japan, where memories of the 2011 Fukushima earthquake and tsunami are still fresh, were seen taking shelter on the top of buildings, away from the threat of any waves. Almost 2 million people were under evacuation orders. Japan now has downgraded its tsunami alerts for much of the country. And in Hawaii, people were caught up in the traffic as they tried to obey directives to get to higher ground. The warning there has also been downgraded to an alert. Some people have been told they can head home. The U.S. mainland is the latest to have been impacted. Waves of up to a meter above tidal levels have also been recorded in Northern California. That's in the last few hours. But no major damage has been reported. Well, the area affected by the tsunami across Japan is absolutely vast. We are currently at the mid-level of the country's alert system. Our Japan correspondent Shaima Khalil says waves could hit suddenly as high as 3 meters.
Dozens of waves have hit Japan's Pacific coast, and the reason why so many people have been affected by the evacuation order, nearly 2 million people, as you've mentioned, is because it covers a huge area of that coast, from Hokkaido in the northeast to Wakayama in the southwest. So a big area, really, where we've seen train lines in that coastal area have stopped. We've seen a Sendai Airport, a coastal airport that has been closed, grounding 21 planes, affecting 2,000 people. But mainly the main advice still remains, which is even if we have these waves that have hit the coastal as high as 1.3 meters, as you say, they could go as high as to 3 meters and they could hit suddenly. That's the message from the Meteorological Agency as they try to continue to assess how high these waves are, how hard they're going to hit, and which areas as well.
That's the situation in Japan. Let's speak now to Kim Hutchinson, a data scientist at the National Tsunami Warning Center in Alaska. Kim, good to see you. A huge amount of data, I'm sure, coming into you at the moment. Can you just give us an update of where we're at this very moment when it comes to the tsunami across the Pacific?
Hi, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. Currently, we are seeing water levels hitting the United States West Coast, so Alaska, Oregon, California. And we're seeing them mostly in the level between 0.3 meters to 1 meter. And that's what we call an advisory here. So that's when we worry about coastlines and harbors having damage. But we're not necessarily worried about the tsunami flooding onto shore.
So what's your advice to people in those areas, Kim?
Stay away from the beaches. Today's not the day to go suntanning. And stay away from the harbors. Tsunamis can last a long time, and this one is still hitting.
Is there a concern about aftershocks, Kim?
Aftershocks are a common part of earthquakes. This was a really large earthquake, though. All I can say is we're here, we're prepared, we're a 24-hour center, and if it happens, we'll be ready.
Can you explain?
And with that being said, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar Analysis. To stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Loisa Shimi. And then from 16:30, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut. And from 1600 hours, you've got the Business Economic segment brought to you by David Chombe. From Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful day. I'll see you again next time on Thursday for yet another episode on the Radar Analysis, right here, same time, same place, Eagle FM Studios from 1300 hours to 1430.